Every dating app swipe is another loss. Gym bros, fake CEOs, straight up losers. So now the only app I open is Modo Casino, because at least there I'm surrounded by winners, real winners, thousands of them. While everyone else is in the single swamp, I'm at home relaxing while stacking bonuses, hitting wins, and playing all my favorite Vegas style games. Modo Casino, the only app worth your time.
Modo Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Modo.us for more details.
Download the Modo Casino app today. Must be 21 plus.
Modo Casino, America's social casino.
Stop the podcast.
Stop the podcast.
Hi, everybody. Just to let you know, this episode of Fish is sponsored by TV licensing.
Yes, TV licensing. What are you watching on TV, Andy?
I have been watching a show that's called 2 Weeks in August.
Okay.
Despite it being July at the time of recording.
Oh, you don't have to watch TV shows in the time that their name references.
No, absolutely. I watched The Darling Buds of May in winter. Anyway, 2 Weeks in August. It's a really good series. It's set on a lovely Mediterranean holiday.
Ooh.
And it's a group of old mates from uni who've gathered together. Some of them have got kids, some of them haven't. Some of them have been going through big life events. And it's one of those amazing pressure cooker series where things just get more and more and more tense.
Oh, those stressful ones.
I love it. I love it.
I love my comedy, I gotta say. So I've been watching Android, which is Diane Morgan's new thing, and I absolutely love it. But I just, for me, I always, on television, watch everything with someone from Bolton in it. That's basically all I watch.
And she's from Bolton.
She's from Bolton.
But in this show, I believe she's a robot.
She's a robot, and it is not certain where in the country she's from.
It depends where the facility is that makes her, I suppose.
I guess so. But what are we actually here to say?
Oh, we're here to say that if you want to watch any of these shows, your TV license covers you to watch over 400 TV channels and everything on BBC iPlayer.
That is incredible.
So 2 Weeks in August has finished going out now, but you can get hold of it on the iPlayer.
If you want to find out more about this, then go to tvl.co.uk/pod.
Now back to the tension and the stress and the misery of this episode of Fish.
Oh, I thought you were referencing Bolton. On with the podcast.
Hour 2, Robbie and Rex Road, 1025, 1063 The Game, brought to you by Chuck McDowell and Medical House Calls, Middle Tennessee's best medical care in the comfort and safety of your own home. For more information, go to medicalhousecalls.com. Medical House Calls, where the nearest clinic is your home. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Nick Keyser here with you on this Thursday morning. We'll have Preds Pick to Click coming up later this morning at 845. Your chance to participate and win a pair of tickets to an upcoming Preds home game. Pick to Click brought to you by TJ Anderson Homes of Benchmark Realty. List your home with TJ to get your home seen, heard, and sold. Speaking of the Preds, they're back in action tonight. Andrew Burnett will join us at 7:30. So looking forward to that. Coming up later in the show today, Charles Robinson from 8 to 8:30. Talking all things NFL, and I'm sure we'll get into the Titans with Charles as well. The Derrick Henry sentiment this week has been interesting to watch. A lot of Titans fans kind of bracing for the possibility of this being the final game for Derrick Henry in a Titans uniform heading into this week. And it's been, you know, I've seen a lot of videos this week on social media of some of his best highlight runs, be that the 99-yarder against Jacksonville or him tossing Josh Norman aside like a rag doll in the Buffalo game. And there's a lot of runs to choose from and a lot of moments from Derrick Henry. Lots from that one I had forgotten about that is actually one of my favorites is the Baltimore playoff game when he turns Earl Thomas around and kind of uses him like a lead blocker.
Yeah.
That's a good one.
Right after Earl Thomas, I don't forget what he said. He said something that week about how they're going to shut down Derrick Henry. Yeah. And then he's like, here, how about you become my fullback instead?
Get out and make sure you block ahead of us. I mean, it was interesting to bring it up with Kuharski yesterday. So I'll ask you, if this is it, and we don't know, but if this is it for Derrick Henry in a Titans uniform, how do you put into words what he has meant for this franchise and what his legacy as a Titan will be if it's all said and done on Sunday?
Yeah, it's a great question. First of all, I got about 3,000 words on this coming tomorrow at the Athletic.
All right.
So I'm trying to put it into words. But there's a lot, you know, a lot of it is like how it all came about. It's really amazing, actually, how the Titans even ended up with him. You know, it was not supposed to be the case on his end or on their end. But that's what happens sometimes with the NFL draft. And then the journey here, too, I think it's easy to forget the struggles early and the real uncertainty over him and the ups and the downs until he finally caught fire. But once he did, and I really do go back to that Jacksonville, that 99-yarder. I think that's – at that point, it was still very much like, okay, he's talented and he's frustrating and Chris Mortensen just reported John Robinson was looking to trade him and all these things. Yep. And then that play, which was, to me, you know, Tony Dorsett had the other 99-yard run. And if anybody's seen the replay of that, it's a 99-yard touchdown run. But, you know, it's like loaded box and he gets out of it. And he kind of just, it's there's one guy down the sideline, he just outruns him. I mean, Derrick Henry had to, like, you know, it was like Tecmo Bowl where you just, like, blow guys. You have to throw them aside. Yep. And like, but that play from then on, I mean, I think he had one of the most amazing runs. I mean, the NFL, you know, from there, you know, really until he got hurt in 21. So 3 years later, a 3-year run of being, you know, I think a top five, you could argue, NFL player. And some people would say, no, the top 12 are all quarterbacks or whatever. But I would make that case. And so what does that mean to the Titans? Like we were talking about yesterday. I mean, I think it's top three is, I think, very clear, I think.
Yeah.
I was trying to think, like, are we underrating, like, a Keith Bullock, you know? Are we underrating – yeah, obviously Chris Johnson had an incredible season, but he's not – it's not the same thing.
No.
Javon Kearse was amazing, you know. A lot of great players. Like, someone yesterday was like, well, that kind of tells you the state of the franchise, the fact that, you know, Derrick Henry is right there with, like, Minaire and Eddie George and, like, there's nothing in between. And that's true, but there wasn't nothing in between. It's just like those are the top guys.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I think you make a case he's as popular as anybody who's played for this team.
It was interesting right there to get Kuharski's, like, thoughts on the Henry McNair side of things yesterday, just in terms of, like, McNair was a great player. Obviously, he won a league MVP. So it's a different discussion from Henry, and some of that's based on the position that he played. But, I mean, if you look at McNair's number, and we talked about this, you know, when Tannehill was on his run, right? Of, like, just the, like, if you go back and look at McNair's numbers, they're not necessarily going to blow you away. And some of that is, it was a different era of football, and they just didn't throw it as much. At least the Titans didn't throw it as much back then. And some of that was, I think McNair, it took a while for him to grow into kind of that guy, where he was throwing it around. And by the end of his Titans career into his Baltimore career, he was that guy, throwing the ball around all over the place. But it wasn't always that way. So it was kind of it's a different thing, because you do go back and look at some of the box scores, and it's like, oh, the Titans won 17-14, and McNair threw 12 passes for 96 yards, had a touchdown, had 30 yards rushing, and Eddie George carried the ball 38 times for 102 yards, and they won. Like, that's a lot of what that era kind of was at times. So, you know, the McNair, Eddie, Derek discussion, I think some of that's in the eye of the beholder and just who you loved the most if you're a Titans fan. But I think you can make the case that Derek is the best player since they switched over to being the Tennessee Titans. I would still go with McNair, but I think it's close.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I mean, McNair, it was about much more than the numbers.
Yeah.
And Derek has ridiculous numbers, but it's about much more than numbers with him too, right? With McNair, it's the toughness, clutch plays. You could have a 127-yard passing game, but you made that one throw, or you couldn't practice because you're sternum all week, but then all of a sudden you're taking hits on a Sunday. And so with Derek, it's like, yeah. I don't remember how long the run was where he threw Josh Norman around like a rag doll, but I know I saw it, you know?
It was like 6 yards, I think. Yeah. It's
yeah.
crazy.
But, yeah. So, you know, it's like when you have these memorable moments, and I think toughness is a big part of it with anybody, right? Like how many beloved NFL players – was like toughness not part of the story?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, there's some, but you know that's typically tied into this. And obviously Derrick Henry, just the physicality, the pounding he's taken, the punishment he's taken and delivered, all that stuff's part of it.
Well, it's the different moments too, right? Like from Henry's perspective, the 99-yard run, the stiff arms that we've seen, both the Norman one, he had one in the Lions game at home a few years ago too, which was just outrageous. I mean, he's had some highlight reel moments that way, but it's, you know, the New England game in the playoffs where he was great, Baltimore in the playoffs on the road where he was great. You know, for McNair, I've thought about this before. Like, if McNair and the Titans finish off that last drive and they tie it up against the Rams in the Super Bowl and they go on to win, like, just think about that last drive leading them down the field He's got Kevin Carter like draped all over him. He escapes from it, makes the dart, you know, 30 yards down the field that way to Dyson, and they end up being 1 yard short. But if they finish that off, like, we'd be talking about that last drive and what he did on that drive forever. And it's just, you know, Derrick Henry never had.
We still do talk about that.
Exactly. Yeah. But like, Derrick Henry never had. You know, it's not like he ever carried them to like an AFC championship or Super Bowl appearance. But, I mean, some of the moments that he had, like when you go back and look at highlight tapes of NFL running backs, and they start doing like, you know, they do on this on the NFL Network sometimes, like just these all-time running back specials. You know, 20 years from now, you're going to see a lot of Derrick Henry on that tape.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And, yeah, obviously the run he had, they go to New England, they end Tom Brady in New England.
Yep.
Derrick Henry dominated that game. They go – right now I'm hearing a lot – there's a lot of talk out of Baltimore this week because now they're the one seed about we remember – you know, well, it was Derrick Henry who destroyed that. Derrick Henry went into Baltimore on a Saturday night. Lamar Jackson MVP, Baltimore Ravens number one seed, and he ran all over him. And then, well, he was doing it to the Chiefs in the first half of the AFC Championship game, and to their credit, they stopped him. And so the Chiefs go to the Super Bowl instead of the Titans. I still think that one of the best moments for Derrick Henry, and you could actually say, and I may write this actually, but I think you could argue that the peak of this era was when he came out of the tunnel before the Bengals game, because it was like at that moment they're the one seed, you know, beat the little Bengals, and you got the Chiefs or Bills coming into the, and they're going to have to come into this place.
Yeah.
The place is totally up in arms. He's just the fact that he's able to suit up again and play, like that was the moment where you're like, wow, this is it. And then the first play of that game, it started going the wrong way.
It did.
And it's kind of gone the wrong way since. Not for him necessarily. I mean, that's the thing. I mean, he had a 1,500-yard season last year.
Yeah. You know?
But for them, you know, and he was part – he more than anyone lifted them to that summit.
Well, that's part of, like, the decision the Titans have coming up with him. And I mean, to be fair, the decision that he has with the Titans is also – like, he's going to end up – you know, let's say he has a big game on Sunday and he ends up with, like, 1,100 yards this year or close to it. Part of me in my mind is always going to think about, like, okay – well, what could he have done this year if you put a competent line around it?
Yeah.
And I don't know what the answer is. I think it's clear that he has regressed and he's not, you know, peak Derrick Henry that he was. But I think part of the question you got to ask yourselves if you're the Titans is, well, how good do we think he still is? Because if you fix the offensive line, can he still be a 1,400-yard back? Because if he can be a 1,400-yard back, there's a lot of value in bringing that back to me if you're the Titans.
Yeah, it gets into if he does come back, do you want him to have enough work to be a 1,400 yard back? And if you don't, you know, this is so many. If you don't, then what's the value? You know, like Tim says, Henry's my favorite Titan of all time, and I was at the Liberty Bowl. He may not be the same, but with a line, it could create a hole. Still a top running back. I hope he's here next year. But with Rand already trying to trade him last offseason, I know that's a dream scenario. But I will say this, Tim, making inquiries on that. It's not the same as, like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Trying to trade. It was incumbent on Ran or any GM coming in here to find out about Derrick Henry and the interest and find out about Ryan Tannehill and the interest, right? Because it wasn't a sure thing that the Titans were going to go for it one more time. And as it turns out, it was a failed idea.
Yeah.
They didn't even come close, but – I wouldn't look at that and then say for sure, okay, well, then there's no ways back. Now, Titans could have tried to extend him this year. I didn't hear anything about that happening. So, but I wouldn't rule it out. You know, he has to see what's out there. And if something good's out there, you know, in terms of pay, in terms of team, opportunity, all that, then he should go. But I could still see it coming back to a conversation with these two.
What do you make of what could be potentially Derrick Henry's final game as a member of the Tennessee Titans coming up on Sunday? Should it be Derrick Henry's final game? We'll take your thoughts on that. 615-737-1025, our phone number. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, The Game.
Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game, live from our 102.5 The Game studios, brought to you by Spring Hill Heating and Cooling, keeping your home feeling comfortable all year round. Visit springhillac.com. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Nick Keyser here with you. We'll have Predators head coach Andrew Brunette coming up here in about 10 minutes or so at 7:30, joining us, present action tonight, taking on the Calgary Flames, discussing what could be Derrick Henry's final game as a member of the Titans coming up on Sunday. We'll see what happens on that front. Taking your thoughts on that. Should it be Derrick Henry's final game? Would you like to see the Titans re-sign Derrick Henry? I am, from the money perspective of what he could command, and this is going to be a big talking point all offseason, obviously, so we don't have to get a ton into it today, but it is going to be interesting to see how much interest is out there for Derrick Henry. And, are the Titans, if you're Carthon and Vrabel, obviously Vrabel's been around him much longer than Carthon has. But as you look at the whole equation, he'll be 30 years old. His birthday is coming up, isn't it? I want to say it's like...
Yeah, he's not 30 yet.
It's his birthday today.
Is that right?
Happy birthday, Derek.
Well, there you go.
He's 30 years old today.
What could be his last pre-game meeting with the press...
Yeah.
Well, Teresa.
Happy birthday,
Teresa.
To him.
You better offer up a happy birthday right. to him. So he's 30. Wow.
He's 30 years old today. So there's the whole conversation about, running backs and 30 years old. And then if you're the Titans, you have to factor in, okay, well, I see that. How much different is this guy who, outside of one injury, has been pretty healthy in his NFL career and is just built like a different human being? Like we talked about that yesterday with Kuharski. Is there a scenario where the Titans would bring him back? Or, is it possible that the Titans just are dead set on moving on? That's also a possibility when you start to look at Derrick Henry and the way that they want their offense to function as they move forward here. It is possible that Vrabel and Carthon and Tim Kelly and everybody just says, you know what, we love Derrick Henry. He's a franchise icon, but it's time to move on. Very well could be how things go.
Yeah. If that wasn't a really strong possibility, then I would imagine they would have offered an extension, right? So, the most likely scenario is that this is Derrick Henry's last week and Sunday is his last game with the Titans. I'm not convinced it's 100% because I just don't know. Don't know what he's going to find out there. And on the Titans side of things, like you said, maybe it's already a non-discussion. It's just a different kind of back trying to pair with Tajay Spears. And, I've said earlier this week, there are always good running backs who are coming out of college who you don't have to. Tajay Spears is a good player. They got him in the third round.
Yep.
So, like I've mentioned this week, Blake Corum, there's a guy who I think is, he reminds me of Kyren Williams, who has been fantastic for the Rams out of Notre Dame. So it may just be it's time to get a rookie who doesn't cost a lot of money, and it's maybe a little bit different style of player than what Derrick is. How does Tim Kelly feel about that? How does he envision his offense functioning, either with Derrick Henry or with a very different kind of back? You're not going to find you're not going to find the same. You can find a quote-unquote power back.
Yeah.
You can find a physical back, and that may be the best pairing with Tajay Spears. I think they've been a nice complement to each other. But you're not going to find Derrick Henry.
I'm looking at his career numbers. It's amazing to think about what he's done in this division against those opponents. He's averaging 89.5 yards per game on the ground against Indy. He's averaging 102.2 against Houston and 100.8 against Jacksonville. And when you think about in the last two times he's seen Houston, he had 9 yards rushing earlier this year and 42 or whatever he had the other day. For that average to still be at 102.2 just kind of shows you what he's done to the Texans and what he's done to the Jaguars throughout his Titans career. It's pretty incredible.
Oh, yeah. No, especially the Texans. The fact that he could have these two games this year and that still be the average. I forget what it was, but it was obviously big before that. Here's an alternative viewpoint from Chris in Nashville.
Okay.
Derrick Henry's awesome, but he owes Ryan Tannehill a huge thanks. Tannehill's a quicker, more accurate thrower than Mariota. that opened the door for Henry to be great. Now, first of all, there's some people who are going to jump all over you, Chris. I'm not going to jump all over you because I think it's been too much of Tannehill was no good and Derek just carried him. But I would say that, you know, let's remember that Henry, you know, his big emergence, which was late in the 2018 season. I mean, the last four games of that season, starting with a 99-yarder, he went nuts, got himself to 1,000 kind of out of nowhere. That was with Mariota as quarterback. And once they figured out the offensive line crap in 2019, although it was also Tannehill,
yeah,
you know, then he had a great year. He had some big games with Mariota at QB. He obviously had the monster playoff game after the end of the 2017 season with Mariota at QB. So I wouldn't say chicken and egg. You know, I wouldn't say Tannehill made it possible for Henry, but it was a great partnership.
Yeah, I mean, it was for whatever reason, and the offensive line coming together was a big part of it. You know, obviously Tannehill was a better quarterback than Mariota was. But the offense and even Henry's production in the offense opened up in 2019 once Tannehill took over as quarterback. Now, also, Lawan was coming back, and they were getting settled in and all those things. But I'm with you. Like, the end of the 18 season, it's amazing to think about. There was a point where David Flewellen was an option over Derrick Henry. Like, they wanted to play David Flewellen
right
over Derrick Henry.
He was the third back in that. They blew out the Patriots 34-10, and Derrick Henry had fallen out of favor to the point of being the third back. And I believe that's the week that Chris Mortensen reported that John Robinson was looking around in terms of moving him. So, and David Flewellen tore up his knee early in that game. Derrick Henry had—I know he had a touchdown in that game, but you know, I mean, look, he has been consistent with it. You know, he puts it on himself for that stuff. I mean, he had a lot of stuff to figure out, you know.
Yeah.
And the offense is very different, too. You know, the exotic smash mouth that he played the first 2 years, which, again, he's DeMarco Murray's backup anyway, but there wasn't a lot of zone stuff in that playbook. And then all of a sudden you go to the wide zone offense of, you know, that LaFleur, that your guy LaFleur brings in.
Mm-hmm.
And it took him some time, and he admitted it.
No question.
Some people don't want to hear what he says, but that's what he said because, you know, he's being honest.
Coming up next, we'll be joined by Predators head coach Andrew Brunette. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Nick Kieser here with you on this Thursday morning. Preds back in action tonight, taking on the Calgary Flames at Bridgestone Arena. To help us talk more about that, we go to our 102.5, The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in Predators head coach Andrew Brunette. Andrew, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, fellas. Doing good.
Awesome. Happy New Year to you. Appreciate you taking time to be with us this morning. So, Andrew, you were talking the other night after the game about Nyquist, and you've used the term cerebral player with him many times. I just want to dig in a little bit deeper on that. When you say cerebral player, what exactly are you seeing from Nyquist when he's out there, and what do you think separates him in that category?
Well, I think it's just, I guess you could say it's kind of his instincts of how the game's played. He has tremendous poise with the puck. He kind of knows what's going on, or he anticipates so well, kind of knows what's going on before it happens. He's in spots before the puck gets there. You know, you could say the all-time greatest, probably cerebral player would be Gretzky kind of thing. And I'm not saying he's Gretzky, but he has some of those attributes that he's able to think his way through the game. He darts his way through the game. And he's got tremendous poise and is aware where everybody kind of is on the ice. And, you know, to boot, I think he's a great leader. I mean, he's been really good with the young guys. He's the type of player that probably every guy on the team wants to play with him because he's unselfish. He does the right things. And he's obviously fun to play with because he kind of gets the puck in all those different areas.
So before you got these guys on the ice, Andrew, did you in your mind envision that maybe that these three guys could potentially have the kind of chemistry together that they obviously do have?
Yeah, I mean, I think in the summer, crossed my mind. I thought it would probably work when you're looking at different combinations and who would play well with who. And obviously, seeing Gus play as much as I have over the years, I kind of knew what he could bring. And obviously, with Factor, his hockey sense is off the charts. I guess with Phil would be the guy I wasn't sure exactly what would complement him. Looking over, you know, the years and seeing him play the different times, I think he's kind of played pretty well with everybody. So I wasn't sure if there was any, you know, rhyme or reason why he had a little chemistry with different guys. So I thought it would be a good mix. I think early on you're trying to spread out, you know, your veteran guys, your proven players to maybe help the younger guys and see if they can kind of help them develop a little chemistry or help them kind of teach them the game a little bit or how to grow offensively with different players. And, you know, kind of got to the point where I put them together. And if you would ask me, did I think it'd be as good as it has, I'd probably say no, but I thought definitely there'd be a chance.
Well, Andrew, with that point, you know, we're reaching, you know, the halfway point of the season here, and some of these younger guys specifically have never been through an 82-game grind like this. From your perspective, how are some of your younger players holding up and kind of handling that grind to this point?
Well, I think they're doing okay. I think I'm well aware. I think they're probably on path that this was going to be hard. It wasn't going to be easy. An 80-game schedule, I think a lot of them came up with, 30 games, 40 games left in the year. They kind of got into a lineup that was full of injuries, teams that maybe weren't taking them completely serious or didn't know who they were. Now they've kind of made a name for themselves, the Evangelistas and the Novaks, and teams are aware, and they're going to play them harder and more physical, and it'll wear you down. It'll grind you down a little bit, this league. That's why it's the best league in the world, and it's, you have to understand and find as a young player that you're going to have to go through this because it'll make you better. You know, you got to kind of go through the muck here. It'll make you better going forward as a player. But then also you got to understand a little bit when your game's slipping and not just from what the coach is saying, interpersonally, if you understand where your game's at, you're able to correct it or try to correct it or do things to help correct it. So I think they're on track of what we expected. You know, you always, as a coach, want a little more of them. And then basically the message is being just understanding where we are. You don't want to lose your game right now because once February comes, you won't be able to find it. So we're trying to get them to find their game right now.
Talking to Preds coach Andrew Burnett. Well, speaking of young players, obviously a situation where you needed to call up Yaroslav Askarov. You get a big couple points in Washington, and I got to think just a thrill for him, kind of an unexpected thrill here early in his career. What did you see from him? What kind of energy does he bring to a room?
Well, yeah, I wasn't really familiar with him, and obviously didn't see him last year at all. Saw him in camp a little bit. Camp was kind of chaotic, and I think he only played a period maybe or a couple periods, and didn't get a really feel for him. I got a little even saw him last week for a game, for a period, and then to see him in Washington, you know, I actually saw him in practice the next day, and I was like, well, okay, now I get it. Now I see it. I thought he competed. His athleticism is off the charts. So I was excited. I was excited to see him play in Washington, and he lived up to the expectations. He brings, I guess, the energy. I think he plays the puck so well. I think, and he handles it so well. And his athleticism, again, is off the charts. So I thought he was really good. For him, what an opportunity. What a dream come true, I think, in a lot of different senses, where you're going against Ovechkin in a penalty shot to win the game, or a shootout to win the game. I mean, I don't know, you know, if you could draw it up any differently. I guess, you know, in my generation, be like kind of going against Gretzky one-on-one or something, you know. So I think for him, what a thrill. And I was so happy we were able to put him in that position and for him to succeed, because I think it bodes well for the organization moving forward.
So, Andrew, you know, obviously a good performance from Saros the other night. He gets the shutout against Chicago. And you were talking after the game about, you know, learning more about him and kind of being able to tell by his movement when he's dialed in. What has that process been like? Kind of take us behind the scenes as a coach, trying to learn the personalities and what makes each guy tick in a locker room that has got a bunch of different people and I would assume players with a bunch of different personalities and needs.
I mean, that's the greatest challenge of coaching, I think, is trying to get to your players and building relationships and understanding and seeing, like you said, what makes them tick, what doesn't. Again, what I was talking about forwards, what gives them chemistry, what doesn't. And with a goalie, it's a little different. You know, I never really played the position. I'm not an expert by any stretch of the imagination. But you try to get to know the person a little bit. And then you, as you're watching, you understand and see kind of what his game is. It's, you know, we put him in a little bit of uncomfortable position in a lot of different ways. And in the way that we've kind of played a little bit different defensively, trying to push the pace a little bit offensively, is going to leave us a little bit vulnerable at times, especially at the start of the year. And that puts a a big strain on goaltending when they're not overly used to it. I remember in Florida with Bobrovsky, it was very similar, where, you know, he's coming from Columbus where he's getting 50 shots a game, and he came into Florida and you know, we'd have the puck for the first period, and then we'd have a breakdown, be a 2-on-1 and be in the net, you know? And so for a goaltender, that's probably the worst possible thing to happen. And it took an adjustment period for him. And I think with Juice at times, you know, take the Detroit game, for example, where, you know, we last Friday where we, you know, shooting them out, playing them, I think it was 15-2 or 15. So he's not really in the game. And then we take a kind of a careless penalty and we give up about 10 or 11 shot attempts in one penalty kill. And I'm sure talking to Juice, I mean, I'm sure it's just like, you know, it's chaos, right? I mean, it's shrapnel everywhere and you're going, what just happened? You know, so you're kind of not overly in the game and that happens. So I think there's a little bit of a, you know, growing and uncomfortable position for him and for our group. And I think a little bit, again, the way we play, the way we defend, it was a little bit different than the past. And I think for him and for us, we're just trying to get used to each other. And I think he's rebounded really well. You know, I don't think it's taken him too much time, but you can see a little bit of level of being uncomfortable early.
You talked about wanting to be better at home. Obviously, big win over Chicago. You got Calgary now coming in. But obviously, you guys have been very good lately on the road. I guess as a coach, would you rather try to fix the home thing than the road thing? If your team's able to travel, stick together, and win those games, you figure you can kind of get it going in your own building, especially with the atmosphere that you have in there?
Yeah, I mean, we want it all.
Right.
It seems you fix one, you don't get the other one breaks. I think for me, I think, you know, and I've kind of stayed this almost all year, I think home ice is crucial. And being a good team, being a playoff team, being a contending team. Because no matter how well you play at the road, there's all kinds of circumstances. You can't, you know, you're not, momentum changes are on the road. And that's just normal. So for me, it's so hard to win on the road. And it is at home, obviously, hard to win any time in this league, obviously. But I think if you can, you know, have an identity at home and understand this is a hard place to play and we're going to come at you in waves and we're going to have the puck and we're going to make you defend. And just having that aura a little bit is kind of what I'm trying to ingrain and instill in this culture and this team, that, you know, it's a different animal when you're at home. And we're able to do it. I find for 20 minutes and then we lose a little bit of our momentum and we give free momentum up and we're having trouble either closing teams out or putting teams away, you know, the Dallas game before Christmas, and we leave ourselves hanging late in games. And then now you're playing a 50-50 game of chance, and chance is going to go either way. So I'd like to see us play a little better at home. I mean, I like our effort. To me, it's a little bit of that consistency and a little bit of that mindset. To me, we feel content playing 20 minutes at home or 32 minutes at home or 48 minutes at home, where I'd like us to really dictate the pace and make it a hard place to play for 60 minutes.
Well, Andrew, really appreciate your time. Thanks so much for being with us this morning. Good luck tonight, and we'll talk to you soon.
All right, guys. Thanks. Have a good day.
You as well. Predators head coach Andrew Brunette, our guest on Robbie and Rex. So Preds in action tonight at home, taking on the Calgary Flames. We'll have Preds pick to click coming up later in the competition, which is no longer a competition from my standpoint, but Rex Road and everybody else continue to put up points. So good for y'all.
It's a competition for you to avoid getting beat up by the guy you picked to score and then guarantee he won't score.
There could be some truth to that. Coming up next, it's time for the Rex Rant with Joe Rexroad. You can check it out every morning at 7:45. We will do that next. This is Robbie and Rexroad, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.
Sometimes he wakes up on the wrong side of the bed. And sometimes he's just, well, Joe.
Awkward moment, let's do it.
This is the Rex Rant, now on Robbie and Rexroad.
Oh, this is so frustrating.
He's kind of ugly, though.
It is time for the Rex Rant. You can check it out every morning at 7:45 here on the program. Joe Rexroad's rant of the day. Joseph, have at it, my friend.
Nick always tries to get, you know, he wants to know what my rant's going to be like, and then so he can set up like an intro. No, I'm not talking about the Titans today, buddy. Sorry, I threw a curveball at you.
Yes, wrong.
Also, sorry that we didn't ask your question.
Nick's tossing questions out.
Yeah, that you put up on the board there. I didn't even notice it.
These two are morons. Let's get in here and throw a question out that way.
Yeah, we should have made the whole thing about Cody Glass.
We should have. Yeah.
You can always jump in, man. You can, like, jump in and say, I mean, that's happened before.
It's like, enough. These guys have talked long enough.
Hi, Andrew. I'd like to ask you a question. I'm going to be quick today, college football, and we can take it wherever we want from there. Actually, there's another college football thing that we've been talking about in the text line that I think might be interesting to bring up. But okay. I just want to be real quick today and say this rant is against me. I screwed up.
Okay.
I want my Heisman vote back. I screwed up. I reject that the Heisman voting should take place after the playoff. I reject that. It's fine timing-wise how it is. I hate people who vote for the Heisman, as we've discussed, who vote before all the information is in, and some people did. And so if you voted for Jaden Daniels and you didn't wait to see Michael Penix play against Oregon and beat Oregon and look great doing it, well, shame on you. But you know what? I did wait. And I still voted for Jaden Daniels, and I screwed up. I screwed up because it doesn't always have to be this way. Like, Ndamukong Suh didn't have one moment. That Nebraska team wasn't special. I think they went like 9-3. He did blow up Texas in the old Big 12 championship game. But he didn't have a quote-unquote Heisman moment. Everybody doesn't have a quote-unquote Heisman moment. But you know what? Michael Penix did have Heisman moments. He played in huge games all year for an undefeated team that's about to play for a national championship. And Jaden Daniels had no Heisman moments. And so the numbers were great. He was amazing. Caroline Fenton kind of talked me into it. I'm not ranting about Caroline. It's my fault.
Caroline, call back in.
But the bottom line is he had a huge game, and he looked and they got crushed by Florida State. And he looked incredible in other games, but they just had an season. I know Brian Kelly just fired their D coordinator and about three other assistants yesterday. You're no longer part of the family. But I think that the, at least if not a quote-unquote Heisman moment, I think that someone contributing to greatness as a team should be something that is taken into consideration. And I mentioned that. Even though I voted for Jaden Daniels, well, I screwed up. I should have voted for Penix. And I'm sorry. Take my vote. I keep begging for someone to take my vote.
Somebody please take my vote. Take my Heisman vote. Well, they're just going to – I mean, this time next year, there'll be 4,200 people voting on the Heisman. We'll never get to the end of it.
It's is just, that right?
They keep expanding.
Are they increasing the pool? Not. Yeah. Yeah, like 900 now, which is, you know.
Jaden Daniels pretty darn good this year.
No.
I wouldn't feel bad about it if I was you.
Of course. You know, it's not like he's an undeserving winner or whatever. I just wish that I would have put more stock into undefeated team, especially I thought Oregon was going to smoke Washington. So, I think a lot of people thought that too. And then to see what they did instead, I should have put more stock into that.
It's been a big week for Tennessee fans on the Penix front. You know, he was committed to Tennessee. Michael
Penix
Jr. was committed to Tennessee, and then Jeremy Pruitt apparently didn't want him.
Michael, I don't.
Michael, you know, we like to throw the ball and run the ball here.
There you go.
We like to do both. We don't want you to play quarterback here in Tennessee. We got Garantano. We don't need you.
Yeah. Good call, Jeremy.
Good call by Jeremy.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
I mean, it's worked out okay for Tennessee because they did have Hendon Hooker, and now they got Nico. So it's probably going to end up being fine, but it's been a tough one. Watch Michael Penix go. I mean, he was in Indiana. And he was good at Indiana.
He was.
He kept getting hurt at Indiana because they couldn't block for him. And then he goes to Washington, and he's just lit it up. Been a tough one for Vols fans to watch that happen.
I mean, his performance against Texas was like –
it was outrageous.
Yeah, if he throws it like that, well, he might just win a natty Monday.
Are you surprised? And it's starting to pick up some steam now. But I was looking at like a mock draft last week because I was just trying to get like a gauge on what the view of the quarterbacks is. And I can't even remember which one I was looking at, but it had him at like the very bottom of the first round. I was like, he looks pretty good out there, man. Like I wonder. There's always some quarterback that gets a lot of momentum come draft time. Like last year it was Richardson, and he got a ton of momentum. He got drafted fourth overall. There's always somebody, for the most part, that just surges up the draft boards. And I don't know whether or not it's going to be him, but you know, if he goes out there and he wins a national championship and he looks the way he did against Texas, I mean, I think you got to pay attention to that if you're NFL teams, right?
You do. You see this bump some – I think you see it in hoops quite a bit where someone makes a run in the NCAA tournament. I mean, like, think about Shabazz Napier, right?
Oh, yeah.
fine. And then LeBron's like, I want that guy on my team. And you know,
then he left the team, and the team drafted him anyway. It was great. As a Miami Heat fan, loved it.
Yeah, I'm sure. But there's an example of if UConn doesn't make a run out of nowhere as a 7 seed to win it all, it doesn't happen.
Yep.
So, yes, if he wins a championship, does that give him a bump? Yes. Now, Richardson goes to the top of the charts because he's the most athletic guy to ever be in Indy and all that stuff.
Right.
And Penix is not that. But, hey, man, when you can spin it like he can spin it, I mean, I think he's going to go somewhere in the first round. And usually those guys move up as the draft approaches.
I mean, the top two are clear. We've been talking about those two guys all year in Williams and May. You know, when you look beyond that, I think I would take Penix before I would take J.J. McCarthy.
That's just me. Yeah, I would too.
And there are some people who think J.J. McCarthy is going to be a top 10 pick.
I mean, J.J. McCarthy is a lot more athletic, and he's got the tools. But, yeah, I mean, Penix, the accuracy and just the anticipation and all the – that's the most important stuff. Quick reads, reading the defense, making accurate throws over and over again. There's nothing more important. So, like Mark from National City said, he should be the number one pick. Well, he's not going to be the number one pick. You know, Caleb Williams, Drake May are going to go before him. But I agree with you. I would take him over J.J. McCarthy. And
what about Jaden Daniels?
I know. This is turning into Jaden Daniels hate segment. I might take him before Jaden Daniels. I love Jaden Daniels. He's amazing. But, yeah.
Bo Nix? You taking him before Bo Nix?
Yes. I like Bo Nix, and he could sneak into the first round too. I think Nix and McCarthy probably
But what we're talking about is good news again for the Titans, right? Because if they end up at number 7 or whatever it is, there's a lot of quarterbacks that could be taken high or somebody moving up to take one of those quarterbacks. Like there's a lot of quarterbacks in play right now today as we sit here on January 4th in the draft. Now the thing is, like the draft board and all that stuff is going to change so much between now and April. There's almost no point in talking about it, but should be good news for the Titans with all these quarterbacks.
Yeah, and like you said, that's where it happens a lot is a team loves this guy or that guy moves up to get that quarterback. And sometimes they fall.
Yep.
Unexpected, like Will Levis did last year or 2 years ago. It was like, oh, actually, apparently these quarterbacks do stink as much as everybody says they do. So. But, yeah, it is good news for the Titans that there's so many guys who could go high and they could end up with a really good non-QB.
615-737-1025, our phone number. Coming up next, we'll be joined by Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports. We'll get his thoughts on the Titans and all things NFL. Tune in to 94.9 The Fan tonight for Vanderbilt women's basketball. Commodores will be on the road taking on Mississippi State. Tip-off at 6:30, pregame beginning at 6:15. Coverage also available on the 94.9 The Fan app and at 94.9thefan.com. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 1025, 1063, The Game.
You ain't heard about Moto Casino? Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto. I like my slots hot. Moto's free to play, like food stamps. In line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic. Keep your eyes on the road. Hop on Moto Casino. Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly. Moto, America's hottest free-to-play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino.
Stop the podcast.
Stop the podcast.
Hi, everybody. Just to let you know, this episode of Fish is sponsored by TV licensing.
Yes, TV licensing. What are you watching on TV, Andy?
I have been watching a show that's called 2 Weeks in August.
Okay.
Despite it being July at the time of recording.
Oh, you don't have to watch TV shows in the time that their name references.
No, absolutely. I watched The Darling Buds of May in winter. Anyway, 2 Weeks in August. It's a really good series. It's set on a lovely Mediterranean holiday.
Ooh.
And it's a group of old mates from uni who've gathered together. Some of them have got kids. Some of them haven't. Some of them have been going through big life events. And it's one of those amazing pressure cooker series where things just get more and more and more tense.
Oh, those stressful ones.
I love it. I love it.
I love my comedy, I got to say. So I've been watching Android, which is Diane Morgan's new thing, and I absolutely love it. But I always on television watch everything with someone from Bolton in it. That's basically all I watch.
And she's from Bolton?
She's from Bolton.
But in this show, I believe she's a robot.
She's a robot, and it is not certain where in the country she's from.
It depends where the facility is that makes her, I suppose.
I guess so. But what are we actually here to say?
Oh, we're here to say that if you want to watch any of these shows, your TV license covers you to watch over 400 TV channels and everything on BBC iPlayer.
That is incredible.
So 2 weeks in August has finished going out now, but you can get hold of it on the iPlayer.
If you want to find out more about this, then go to tvl.co.uk/pod.
Now back to the tension and the stress and the misery of this episode of Fish.
Oh, I thought you were referencing Bolton. On with the podcast.